and welcome to your weekly dose of the latest sustainability fun news, facts and reviews brought to you by the Green Elephant. This week, what on earth is going on in Texas? Taking action on SDGs, B Corp month is coming, and did we mention it was B Corp month yet? Joining me to discuss these and more as usually is Russell. Howdy, Russell.
Howdy, Mike. Yeah, I don't know if that's derogatory to lay people with our poor expressions of a stereotypical cowboy accent. Yeah.
Well, we'll find out, won't we? Also coming up are our action recommendation behind the scenes, and it wouldn't be a Green Elephant show without fact or fake. We'll also be talking about Amazon, skyscrapers, airports, nuclear power stations, tunnels, oil spills, airports, taxis, kelp, superplants, forests, and cream cheese. Yeehaw! Now, Texas. I've in all the time we've been doing the Green Elephant Show, I've never seen such a huge raft of stories on one topic, and so therefore there was no debate about, you know, what the top story of the week was going to be. And it's interesting because last week we had a story that said wind turbines in Texas have been frozen. Now that story has developed and grown and escalated in the last week to become something absolutely enormous that has gone huge around the world. And There's any number of angles on this that we'll get into, and I think, you know, one of the main aspects here is that Texas just isn't set up. It isn't ready for cold weather. I mean, how often does Texas get cold winter storms and snow? I mean, I think they're more used to getting 48 degrees in heat rather than, you know, extreme cold weather.
Yeah.
So it's kind of hardly surprising that that it struggles, and you know, their usual way of powering themselves, because they have their own grid separate from the rest of the US, which that's another issue, but they've got their own electricity grid in Texas, and most of that is based on natural gas. So pump it out the ground, pump it around the cities and around the rest of Texas.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's quite a traditional, an old system, and it froze. And so Texans couldn't heat their homes. They couldn't do the things they wanted to do. And I didn't realize that natural gas could freeze, but it did in Texas.
Well, it can freeze if it's not transported correctly, or equipment's not maintained to a standard, or any number of reasons that have been poked at, hasn't it, recently? But the interesting thing is, this isn't the first time.
No,
it's, I mean,
they hadn't been warned about this.
No, I mean, it's not just that. There was 2011, they had a similar raft of news stories, and they didn't blame wind then, but wind was fairly small. And back in 1989, they had the same thing happen again. Wind couldn't be blamed for that, because it didn't exist back then. And there was this huge report that said, you need to do stuff about your natural gas, because this could happen again. And it has. And they just don't seem to be learning.
And, you know, there was a story last year that the Texan governor, Greg Abbott, had some utility regulators who, you know, were working with a nonprofit to monitor the state electric's reliability standards. And they decided last year, oh, we don't need those anymore. We'll just work without them. We'll do what we need to do. And what a surprise when the grid came under strain, nothing happened. And I think it's a very interesting political situation in Texas. I think they're heavily Republican. They're heavily lobbied, let's say, by oil and gas interests.
Oil and gas, yeah.
And we've got some oil and gas facts or fakes coming up, but there's some really interesting stats around the size of the lobby and the size of that industry in Texas. So, you know, you've got those organizations lobbying to not be regulated, to you know, not perhaps move to renewables as quickly as they might otherwise do. And I guess that leads on to the next thing, which is, you know, what was the what happened here? What was the problem? Why did this energy outage happen? And it was really interesting to see across the news networks. Who did they blame?
The wind.
It was the wind problem now. How on earth it was the wind's problem when most of the electricity...
They do have Kili down there a lot, don't they?
Well, they do. How on earth it was the wind's problem when most of the electricity comes from natural gas and then oil and things. I mean, but it was the wind's problem because, you know, a handful of turbines froze. And I saw there was a video which we'll come on to later in the show. But the news networks were basically saying it's the wind turbines' fault. And, you know, who funds the news networks? Who pays for the news networks?
Oil and gas. Well, yeah.
it's a big merry-go-round of blame and misinformation. Yeah, I mean,
what they were saying, I think, was wind would normally pick up about, you know, at most 20% of the total draw. But some of the facts and figures that were floating around were that they also chose not to prepare as thoroughly for a cold snap, although it was suggested it was going to be bad. They didn't prepare more than just a basic cold snap. They didn't prepare for this extreme, to which point they didn't have anything on standby. They didn't have anything prepared. And so, as we know, you know, electricity doesn't come out of fresh air. Things have to be spun up.
Yep.
And things need to be started. And if you don't plan to start them up and you don't get warmed up in time for the peak, you just won't hit it in time.
So let's say the problem was wind turbines, and you know they should have had a bit of capacity to help. Do they not have wind turbines in any cold places? You know, Siberia or Canada or other places that are very cold, not have wind turbines there?
Well, funnily enough, they are in all over the Nordic states. So we have Sweden and the Netherlands and Finland have wind and they survive just fine.
Well, they do things. They put their wind turbines have cold weather packages. It's like buying a new car, isn't it? I'll have the winter package, please, on my new wind turbine. But you know, you would when you investing the money in a wind turbine, you would think that you would put the heating and the de-icing components so that they don't get you know, frozen, and they can operate, it says here, down to minus 30 degrees C they use them in Canada, so they don't freeze there. It seems that the, you know, they've tried to do wind on the cheap as opposed to doing wind properly.
I mean, if you were to paint a picture, if I was to say Texas, you know, without this news story, you'd think of, you know, large plains, warm weather. If you ever go to Dallas, you'll find the sidewalks are air conditioned. You know, it is a hot state, and this is freaky. The best that they would have on average is minus 3 or 5 in December, January, February. So it is. They do get cold weather, but they don't get perhaps this cold, but they have in the past.
Yeah.
So perhaps applying your winter package, well, to both your wind, it's the gas that failed as well, but they haven't made such a big stink about that.
Well, and also, you know, the rest of the US might be looking at Texas and saying, and pointing a finger saying, well, you've got your own grid and therefore, you know, what did you expect? However, you look over the border to the, you know, one of the other California. Most populous states in California, they've suffered from energy blackouts in the past couple of years, and they've got a lot more renewable, a lot more solar, a lot more wind than Texas do. You know, they've shut off hundreds of thousands of customers from the Californian grid. Now, some of that might be down to wildfires, but they've also had their problems with cold weathers. So it's not like any of the states in the US didn't know that there was an issue here, and a shared issue between all these states. So I guess the question really out of the back of this is, you know, you can You can point fingers. You can, you know, say it was the renewables' fault. You can say they didn't invest in, you know, reliability, or, you know, there was a too strong a lobby from the oil and gas industry. But I guess the thing is, you know, what's next? What's going to happen next? What are they going to do about this?
I mean, the question, after the last report and then another report in 2011, then presumably there'll be another report by the federal state. They have no, the thing you mentioned there is Texas has no interconnection with two other grids. They've got the two other grids serving the east and west of the US, and they haven't got interconnectivity. So they can't share power between them, which is quite interesting. We talk about the Lone Star State, the Lone Electric State. You know, you would have thought they're going to have to come up with some form of contingency that allows them to buy from somewhere else. Well, and if, and the bizarre thing, we also was one, wasn't there, that they, because of their crisis, they cut off gas flow to Mexico.
Yes.
Hilarious. I'm surprised Donald Trump hadn't built a wall across the Rio Grande line. Gas coming from across. But they complained because they hadn't served them. So they're serving, they got other links. Why haven't they done this? So they're going to have to build some resilience into their plans. And I think they one thing they got to stop doing is burying their head in the sand about the chance of extreme weather hitting them. Because it was 89, it was, what was that, 22 years between last two events, and then 10 years. The good chance they have another one in the next 5 years. They're going to have to get prepared, aren't they?
Well, I guess the good news is that conversations have already started in Senate and Congress about policy and about how central policy, you know, forces change onto Texas and perhaps others to, you know, make their grids more resilient. I guess the challenge is that you've then got Joe Biden, as we've discussed in previous episodes, you know, he's doing some really good things and bringing in some really interesting climate change and environmental policies, but he's also doing things like cancelling pipelines left, right and centre. And therefore, if you do want to join the Texas grid with the other grids and bring in various things, how are you going to do that in the short term whilst you scale up the renewables? It's an interesting challenge for those in the US, and it'd be really interesting to hear from our US listeners what your take on Texas is, and if anybody does have a take on this and like to discuss it with us directly, we have a clubhouse room at 6 o'clock, so at the same time as the show goes out today to discuss. Moving on now to our monthly challenge, and our definitions have been getting some good feedback, Russell. People seem to be liking the directness and the simplicity of them. So it is the last week of the challenge. So it's our last kind of education definition.
Yeah. Pick some stinkers for this week.
So so we've got some great ones, and kicking off with Kyoto Protocol. So for those that don't know what the Kyoto Protocol is, it was adopted on the 11th of December 1997, 23 years ago. It entered into force on the 16th of February 2005. Currently, there are 192 parties to the Kyoto Protocol. I'd be interested to know who the few missing ones are. But anyway, the protocol commits industrialized countries and economies in transition to limit and reduce greenhouse gases in accordance with agreed individual targets. The convention itself only asks those countries to adopt policies and measures on mitigation and to report periodically. So a great international protocol and some good ambitious aims, but much like the next one, perhaps doesn't have the legal strength that it could do with.
It does rely on there being some action by the individual countries. So the next one is the very well heard of mainly because of Donald Trump dropping out of it and then Joe Biden immediately signing back into it, is the Paris Agreement. Now, the Paris Agreement is a legally binding international treaty on climate change. So it is different from the protocol, which is, as you say, more guidance. It was adopted by 196 parties at COP21 in Paris in December 2015. And it came into force quite quickly in November 2016. And its goal was to limit global warming to well below 2 degrees, preferably 1.5 degrees Celsius compared to pre-industrial levels. And to achieve this this goal, countries aim to reach global peaking of greenhouse gas emissions as soon as possible to achieve a climate neutral world by mid-century. So legally binding, yes. Impressively specific on what it's got to do? Not really.
No. And we've discussed Paris Agreement on previous episodes, so go and look at previous shows on Paris Agreement to hear our thoughts on that one.
On it, yeah.
Yeah, indeed. Carbon credits now. This is an attempt to join money and environmentalism together. So the idea is that they are a tradable certificate or permit giving the bearer the right to emit 1 ton of CO2e. And if you want to know what CO2e is, listen to last week's show. There are carbon markets similar to sort of financial markets, stock exchanges, which deal in these credits and are one way of encouraging commercial and industrial processes to reduce their emissions. I guess the downside to the carbon credit is that large organisations seek to just buy their way out of their environmental responsibilities. So,
yes, this is seeming to be the problem with the next one as well, is carbon offsetting, which is ubiquitous now. You hear it all over the place, people have offset. And the idea behind carbon offsetting is that CO2e, generated through activities such as, let's say, taking a flight somewhere or you know, using a building, a house or an office building, can be calculated. And then the equivalent amount paid off via a scheme which removes carbon from the atmosphere. Now, the most common one of those we hear about is tree planting. And to be of specific note, it says the carbon removal scheme or one of these projects must be in addition to existing schemes. So you can't just buy into an existing one and say, I planted the same tree 16 times because I've sold it that many times. It has to be provably unique. But I did find an interesting fact on this, is there was a study by the European Commission into United Nations sanctioned offset projects found that 3/4 of the projects were unlikely to have resulted in additional emissions reductions. So, you know, offsetting sounds great. Is it?
Credits and offsets, another form of greenwashing. There's a discussion for another show.
There is a discussion, yeah.
So let's take a look at some other big sustainability news stories from the week. And first up, and this is one for listeners to go and have a look at the link on the show page. Amazon has unveiled a spiraling tree-covered skyscraper for its HQ2, its second headquarters in Arlington, Virginia. And it is an impressive looking building. It looks a bit like a pine cone. kind of spirals up into the air. And, you know, as a new piece of architecture, it's very impressive. They call it the Helix or Helix building. As a workspace that seeks to integrate with nature, it looks great. And it's being run from a nearby solar plant, so all the cooling and heating and everything else is being powered by renewable energy. So, you know, if you put aside the rest of the Amazon footprint and take this building in isolation, then it looks like a good thing.
Yeah, I suppose going back to last week's thing about wood, using wood instead of steel and concrete, that might be the question that it comes to mind on that one. Another building has been revealed called Lusail Towers in Qatar, that targets to be a 4-star global sustainability assessment system standard. So okay. Easy for you to say. Easy, yeah, no, it's not easy there at all, but GSAS. And it consists of a pair of 70-story tall towers and two 50-story tall towers.
Yeah.
Trouble with my in a symmetrical layout. And they have been built to be climate responsive.
Yeah, I like that word. Four climate responsive towers. There we go.
Yes. and you know, they have been built. They got grey water, rainwater and condensate will be recycled for irrigation. And, you know, they have thought stuff through. Enhanced thermal mast. You can have lots of little. It is actually the article which we'll post on the show page is filled full of environmental speak. All the great words you like to marine grade aluminium and so it reduced site energy demand by 35%. So it's got a lot of buzzword in it.
And I guess it'd be interesting to do some analysis on how that plays in with, you know, Bill Gates' suggestion last week that steel and concrete were, you know, one of the five biggest. Contributors to the climate crisis.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And therefore building high and building big is not great.
Absolutely. BlackRock now. And BlackRock, for those that don't know, are one of the world's biggest investment firms. And they are saying that all oil companies and other polluting industries should disclose their carbon emissions and set targets to cut them. Because at the moment, that does not happen. And what BlackRock are saying is that all the companies in which we invest in the future will be expected to disclose their emissions. You know, the more funds, the more major investors that do this, the more likely these large energy companies are to, you know, report and reduce those emissions.
And now moving over to France, Charles de Gaulle Airport in Paris, the largest airport, who has planned to have a fourth terminal to increase capacity by 35 million, has been canned. So there'll no longer be that fourth terminal, no longer be that extra 35 million passengers.
Is this due to emissions and environmentalism?
No. Oh. No, the government said the future expansion is not completely off the table, though, and calling for a revised plan to align with the country's emissions goals. But of course, we have seen the COVID impact.
Is this because nobody's travelling in the next 10 years because of COVID?
Yeah, everyone's going to be too scared to run anyway.
Oh, I see. One of the forms of energy that, depending on your geography and your persuasion, then nuclear is either a good thing or not such a good thing. Germany is perhaps not the biggest fan of nuclear, and they are becoming alarmed by Poland's nuclear energy plans. So they are now moving ahead with plans to build six reactors by 2033, I think it says. Germany is
the first ones.
A bit worried by the speed to do this from a standing start. And I guess if you take the UK, who have a long history since I think 1951 or 54 for Calder Hall, and when we're building new nuclear stations in the UK, and it's taking us kind of 20 years to build them, and Poland's going to throw them up in a decade. It's an interesting.
It's an interesting problem, that one. There was a couple of things that the EU, Poland is part of the, they part of the EU?
Yeah.
So that they're part of the problem the EU have of being able to drive down their CO2 emissions due to energy consumption. And Poland is, 70% coal?
Yeah.
So, you know, they're going to have to do something. Germany need to come up with perhaps an alternative for them.
Well, I think the Germans are worried if the safety and their shortcuts made, then if there is an accident in Poland, then that's a 20% chance that Germany is going to be affected if there's an issue. So it's, on their doorstep.
Interesting that you can't build something like that quickly. I suppose it's reasonable, but hey ho, we are dotting all over the world, having been to America, France, Germany and Poland. We're now in Israel, and this surprised me when I read this one. I heard nothing on it. on the news is there has been a horrendous oil spill, and they don't know where from.
I know, this is the sort
they think it might be from a tanker, but there's been a horrendous spill which has ruined hundreds of miles of coastland. Well, 31 mile oil spill.
40% of Israel's coast. Bonkers. 40% of your coastline from a single oil spill.
And of course, where they, I'd love this. Well, I don't love it. It was horrendous. There was a whale that got beached, and a veterinarian who works for the authority said a black liquid is found in the whale's lungs. But it's not yet known whether the liquid was linked to the whale's death.
What?
I'm kind of going, in any book, I'm sure whales are pretty good at keeping liquid out of their lungs.
Here's a mug of oil. You drink it and let's see what happens, shall we?
You breathe it. See how you do.
I mean, the two scary things, you're right. We hadn't heard about this.
No.
And two, they don't know where it came from. How can you have that much oil and not know where it's come from? It's just.
Yeah. And of course, I don't think Israel's got much of a tidal system, is it? And therefore, you know, natural cleaning of the sea that it does naturally will not be as effective. So this could take years, absolute years, to clean up.
Yeah. Costa Rica, and they have been a leader in renewables and, you know, changing their approach to climate and environmentalism. But you know, not in... You know, most countries are talking about net zero and whether it's going to be 2030 or 2050. They are now talking about complete total decarbonisation by 2050. So it's not net zero. They're regrowing forests, rainforests. They've got rid of their army. They are just investing in education. They are, they've set aside 30% of the land and say you can't touch that, that's protected. So they are doing things way and above, you know, other supposedly more advanced countries are doing. Really interesting country to watch, Costa Rica.
Weren't they one of the seven countries that run completely off renewables as well? I think
I don't know whether that's still the case, but they certainly were at one point. Yeah,
and I would have thought they'd be striving to do that. That new president seems to really have got his sustainability act together. Unlike this one, the Mercosur, is that how you say it? Mercosur South American bloc, which is Brazil, Argentina, Paraguay, and Uruguay, have been striking up a deal with the EU, a trade deal, which is worth $19 trillion between the two blocks.
It's a lot of money.
However, that's a lot of money. In fact, it would be the biggest trade deal in history if it comes off. Mm. However, it doesn't look like it. Well, the public opinion would suggest that it shouldn't come off because of their horrendous attitude towards their natural habitat and the maintaining of their forestry and such like. And so there was a new poll taken across Europe and they were... Only 12% of respondents wished it could go ahead. 85% said no thanks. Yeah. We don't want it at that cost of what they're doing.
So we don't, no deal unless the Amazon's protected. And I guess, you know.
And there's still massive deforestation happening.
But
there,
going back to the presidents, you've got the Costa Rican president who is absolutely doing everything he can to protect the environment and biodiversity and change. And you've got Bolsonaro in Brazil, and we talk about him relatively often because we have stories on the Amazon deforestation, who is doing nothing and actually encouraging deforestation of anything. So just chicken and cheese, really.
It's horrendous.
Yeah. Now it's the pronunciation challenge of the week. And we're talking about cream cheese from Nature's Find. And it's a cream cheese without any milk. Instead, it has Fusarium strain flavor lapis.
Flavor lapis.
If you like it. It's a plant-based kind of milk. New fermentation technology turns fungi, mushrooms, into protein. Fungi protein, this Fusarium strain flavor lapis, whatever you call it, has been used to make this new cream cheese. Again, it's one of those. Would you try it? A mushroom-based cream cheese? I'd probably give that a go, actually.
I guess so. I mean, they've also got a meat as well, and they're patty.
They do that. Well. I mean, Nature's Find, they're doing a range of plant-based products. Cream cheese and breakfast patties as the five breakfast bundle. So you can have breakfast that's all plant-based.
And all thanks to Yellowstone National Park, which is where Yogi Bear lived, wasn't it?
Smart on the average bear, absolutely.
Now, a fairly high-tech one here, which is interesting development. Sony has partnered with a company called LF Energy to automate peer-to-peer distribution of renewable energy. Now, this is a developing and a growing technology of microgrids, where small areas group together and where there's local generation of electricity using renewables, and efficiently distributes that across an area and works with DC and AC and creates a resilient network. So if you were generating electricity, your next door neighbors, where you'd link all those houses up and create a microgrid. So if one had a failure, the other two would pick up the load a little bit. That's an interesting concept, but part of it is it needs to be automated, because up to now it's been a very manual event. But so interesting development. See how that goes.
Yeah. Kelp now, and a startup in Maine, US, is using kelp to capture carbon. And this seems like a great idea. So they're setting up huge kelp farms out at sea. The kelp floats around near the surface, sucks up carbon, and then as it kind of sinks and dies and becomes part of the ocean bed, it takes all that carbon with it. So essentially, you're burying massive amounts of carbon in a very natural way. So it was the interesting quote they gave about what it was like. They said, "We're fishing for carbon." I quite like that concept of fishing for carbon with kelp. So,
I had something to say about that, but it's left me for some reason. As I move on to, I wanted to sing "Kelp" by the Beatles. But
did you? Kelp, I need some carbon. Kelp, not just any carbon. Anyway, moving on.
That's what I was trying to think of.
Yeah.
So UN has offered up a science-based blueprint to tackle climate crisis, biodiversity loss and pollution. It's not the most interesting read, this article, but no. I suppose it's a step in the right direction. It's focusing on the sustainable development goals. The UN is obviously trying to draw out, it's all right having these goals, how are we going to get there? And so they have drawn together a plan which points out obviously the kind of misery that we're suffering, with 1.3 billion people poor and 700 million hungry, and us destroying forests and such like, into a blueprint. And so it's something perhaps we can cover in more depth, because there's a vision in there and to reevaluate and reset our relationship with nature is what they want to do. So it's good stuff. It's just I felt it was the article was a bit lost. It was a bit something and nothing. Headline was great, the content was bleh.
I think the challenge is with a lot of these things is that the thinking already exists on how to do things. Getting it out there, getting it understood and getting it actioned is the challenge. A lot of the time people are trying to reinvent things that just are already there. And I think the message from that story is that the UN and others need to be better at communicating these things. But Dave could perhaps try and put an article in the journal Nature and Climate Change, which is what six experts from US, Europe and Bangladesh did. What they want is to have some clear rules on what counts as climate finance, and they've said that there are some levies we should charge, and the focus of the story is on taxing flights, and not just taxing flights for the sake of it, but using that money to then help developing countries reduce their greenhouse gases. Because one of the issues is that, you know, it's all very well saying everybody around the world reduce your greenhouse gases, but as developed countries that have gone through industrialization and, you know, that kind of prosperity, we're kind of, you know, by saying everybody has to reduce their emissions, we're denying that opportunity to developing countries. So, you know, we need to really support them if we're going to say, you know, you shouldn't develop in the same way that we did. And this is one suggested way of doing that. So, yeah.
Okay, well, a regular subject on our show is plastic.
Yeah.
Surprise, surprise. And here we go. Plastic is now filled with... It's valuable.
Was it?
Potentially. It's okay. Got some... they found some rare earth minerals, which can be found in pretty well every smartphone and similar electronics. And they're finding these rare and highly... expensive materials, dysprosium and neodymium. I should have practiced those.
You should have done.
I wasn't going to try the first one. Okay. So, and they specifically found these things, including in water bottles, children's toys, yogurt containers. And yet they're finding it because, of course, the recycling process isn't stripping these out. Instead, what it's just embedding it into plastic,
putting them back in.
Yeah. And serving them elsewhere. So it makes our plastics more valuable. The other thing they found, they have understood for some time that they can include unexpected materials, says the article. Recycled black plastics in particular are commonly infused with dangerous levels of bromine or even lead. People are still buying black plastic, even though it's very difficult to recycle through your standard recycling.
And it's the challenge of everything sustainability, isn't it? The more questions you ask, the more you delve in, the more you kind of find problems. Because recycling sounds great. Recycle. Of course we should do that. But then the recycling process that leaves these kind of things in the plastic they're recycling, and, you know, it's an imperfect world, and we need to be
see where we can find a tread a fine line, really, isn't it?
But we've got all the pronunciation challenges today. Cotton Easter Franchetti.
Oh. Cotone Aster. Cotone Aster Franchetti.
Cotone Aster. See, cotton Easter. We need our...
It looks like it, isn't it?
But... horticultural people to help us with the pronunciation. But this is a... The Royal Horticultural Society have been doing some research on which plants we can plant in roadside verges to take more carbon out of or absorb pollution actually out of the atmosphere. And they found that the cotone aster was 20% more effective than other plants in absorbing pollution. So expect to see lots of that planted on roads near you soon.
Yeah, I don't think it's nothing new that plants along roadsides does absorb pollution, but this one's a particularly super plant.
Particularly good, yes.
Yeah, so plant anything along your roadside. Good news. Good news, everybody.
Okay, good news.
Their black-footed ferret has been cloned. A black-footed ferret was thought to be extinct, but then they discovered in Wyoming a family of seven in 1981. Okay. And they took them away and tried to protect them. But of course, there was not much genetic deviation in a group of seven in a family. And so there was a danger that was just going to turn into a bit of an inbreeding nightmare. So they have actually found some... they got some cells from a frozen black-footed ferret of a different genetic line, and they've bred successfully a black-footed ferret, and hopefully that they can grow to a slightly more bigger population now, diverse population.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing that you're cloning at face value. You think, well, I'm not sure about that, but when the technology is used to save a species in this way, it's quite amazing what we can do, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Okay, so the action for the week, and this is one for organisations and for people most people work in an organization, there's something called the SDG Action Manager. And I'm not sure that lots of people are aware of this. It's a free tool. We'll put a link to it on the show page. But we talk about the SDGs, the Sustainable Development Goals. We've defined what they are in February, and we've said people can look at those. But they are global goals to which we should all be working to for the good of people, planet, society. And the idea is that you assess your organization, you choose which of the sustainable development goals that you align with, and then you create some actions to get you, your organization, working towards these goals. And I think it's, you know, important if, you know, if the world is going to move towards meeting these goals, then, you know, there has to be a way and a method to, for everybody to do that concerted effort in the same way. And the SDG Action Manager is the way of doing that.
Yep. And that was developed in line with, by B Corp, with, in line with
the, it was, yes,
the United Nations. So if you do your SDG management Action Manager, you will actually start filling in elements of your assessment for being a B Corp as well. So
yeah,
we'll talk more about that next month.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Won't we, Mike?
We will. And talking of next month, and we sometimes do a behind the scenes on what we're working on, and actually we've only been working on one thing in the last week because it's turned out to be quite a monumental undertaking. So next month is B Corp month, and as a certified B Corp ourselves, we're thinking about what we could do and lining this up with our monthly challenge. So as next month is B Corp month, we have lined up 31 days of podcast interviews with B Corps from around the world. We have B Corps from the US, UK, Europe, Asia,
America, Australia.
Yeah, so we've got, you know, from all over the world in all manner of different fields, some of them very, very well known, some of them in industries that you wouldn't expect. Who would have thought that there's a B Corp in mergers and acquisitions, which is a very, you know, financially kind of, you know, almost, you know,
ethically
challenged progression. But there are B Corps in all sorts of places. So we've been working hard to get those finished and brought to you. And yeah, we're really excited. It's going to be a really interesting month. I mean, I've learned loads.
And been inspired. I must admit, absolutely. Some of the people you talk to are doing amazing things. So they're doing brilliant stuff.
Yeah.
In a business and making a profit.
Yeah. Everyone we're speaking to has a reason for what they're doing that isn't just about the money. They've all got a reason. They're all trying to make a social impact of some kind. And it's completely inspiring. For anyone that does want to find out more and discuss B Corps, myself and Hannah Cox, friend of the show, we run a B Corp room on Clubhouse at 12 o'clock on Thursday. So if you want to find out more about B Corps, talk about what it involves, what the assessment involves, what it covers, then join us there and ask any questions you've got. But yeah, B Corp month, look out for it.
Yeah.
Our recommendation for the week. Now, our headline story was on the problem in Texas. And we've mentioned this YouTube channel before, Climate Town. And they uploaded a few days ago an excellent video on the climate issue in Texas. So, again, we'll put a link to this on the show page, but go and have a watch of the Climate Town video on the Texas electricity grid problems. It's not only is it very entertaining,
yeah, he's very good,
and he's very
incredibly
good.
Informative as well.
It is incredibly informative and really gives you the big picture on the issues. And I don't think he makes any particular judgment, just poses lots of questions and presents lots of information. So it's the channel's really great, but this week go and have a look at that video to understand what's going on. So how are you feeling this week, Russell, about fact or fake?
Oh, I'm riding on a high. Having done quite a few fact or fakes in the last few days, because all of our interviews on B Corp Month are doing fact or fakes, and I've been asked some very challenging questions, I must admit. So I'm feeling good.
Yes, I've had some particularly challenging ones myself as well. But so for fact or fake this week, it's Texas.
And oh, no.
So we talk about climate change in Texas and, you know, the cold storms, but I'm suggesting that climate change came early to Texas. The deadliest natural disaster in US history, the Great Galveston Hurricane of 1900, took between 6 and 12,000 lives. Is that a fact? So the deadliest natural disaster in US history, the Great Galveston Hurricane of 1900, is that a fact or is it a fake?
Well, Galveston, didn't Johnny Cash sing a song about Galveston? Was that something else?
So I think that Hurricane Katrina only took 12,000, you know, 1,200 people died in that.
6 to 12,000. I'm going to say that's a fake. Fake.
No, that is actually a fact. The biggest natural disaster in American history was the Great Galveston Hurricane in Texas.
It was such a long time ago, it's a bit vague in the numbers that died.
Well, it was, but it was vague, but it's whatever number you take, it's six times worse than Hurricane Katrina, which was bad. So it was six times worse.
It was bad, yes. Poo.
So, next one. Texas is the second largest producer of oil, natural gas, and sulfur in the United States.
Oh, I mean, we always think of them, the oil-producing state. I mean, I watched Dallas and everything when I was a youngster.
But you got a lot of other states. You got, you know, you got your Californias and your Alaskas and your other ones. But
I'm going to say that's a fact.
No, you should have stuck with your first hunch. It is the largest producer, not the second largest. So,
oh, sorry, I missed that.
The largest, so it's not the second largest. We've talked about Texas wind farms at the start of the show. Texas has the world's single largest wind farm.
Well, I don't remember reading that in any of the Texas stories. I thought there's some big ones in California, some massive ones in California. But actually, I think I might go fact on that one.
Yeah, it is a fact. It has the single largest one in the world.
Wow.
It's not all about wind and energy. Cows, as we know, produce a lot of methane.
Different type of wind.
There are more than 16 million cows in Texas.
More than 16 million?
More than 16 million. So
more than 16 million cows.
16 and a bit.
I would say.
In Texas. I didn't count them all individually, so I'm just going to go with 16.
Well, you would have thought that was a good idea, wouldn't you? But yeah. I'm going to say that is a fact.
It is. It's an astonishing number of cows. All that those ranches. It's two each, I think. And therefore, we move into the decider. And we've talked about natural gas, oil, and things like that. So, there are 250,000 oil wells in Texas.
Again, you know, I watched Dallas and there were a lot of those pump things. I mean, that was 30 years ago. I'm going to say I think that's too low. Fake.
Yep, that is too low. It's actually north of 300,000. And again, exactly.
And he snatches it from death.
Yeah, but that's a lot of oil. 250,000 is a lot.
It is. I mean, but yeah, a quarter million is a lot, but it is bonkers, isn't it? They have massive fields of these things, don't they?
It's
horrendous.
Anyway, that's the end of Fact or Fake for this week. Finally, before we go, Greta Thunberg just stayed away from school as a
from cool.
From cool. Well, she might have done that as well, but she certainly stayed away from cool, and that was her way of protesting and inspired lots of other people to do the same. But some people in London have got a rather more unique way of protesting. And so beneath London's Euston Station, this is an interesting name, climate protester Blue Sandford is chained by the ankle in an illegally dug tunnel. And this tunnel is 12 feet deep and 100 feet long. That's a lot of digging for one person. And it's wet and muddy and propped up by wooden frames. And it's only wide enough to lie on a stomach. So I think if you're going to do a bit of climate protesting, stick yourself in a tunnel that you can barely lie in and challenge the authorities to get you out. But so not content with her method of protesting and staying in a tunnel, Blue's brother Laser. So I'm interested in Blue and Laser's parents as to why they call their children Blue and Laser. Laser, what he
Blue,
did...
Blue, Laser!
He didn't chain himself by the ankle. Encased his arm in a steel tube and then concreted himself into it so that he had to be drilled out.
Hey,
so,
I mean, yeah, you got to go, give him an A star for
effort,
For effort.
If you're going to...
I read the article and there was a little quote from her. She said, "I don't want to be so scared that I have to risk my life, but I feel like I don't have a choice." She said, "Voting hasn't worked. Letters to MPs haven't worked. This is the only thing I can do." And what a sad state of affairs that some youngster has to bury herself 12 foot underground to get the attention of the press.
Yeah.
And it's really, you know, a lot can be done by public opinion. Yeah. And we've seen with Greta Thunberg, as you noticed.
Ideas on climate protests.
More unique than that.
The more unique, the better. More unique than burying your arm in concrete.
Grow myself into a tree.
Yeah. If you've enjoyed the show, then please do go and visit the show page at greenelephant.show. There you can find links to all the usual stories we've discussed, instructions on how to leave a review, and links to find us on all the usual podcast providers. Please do go and visit and review and subscribe, because that really helps us to continue to make the show and hopefully keep you entertained. So hopefully we'll see you at greenelephant.show or on social media at greenelipod is where we are. But until next time, thanks for listening, and we hope you have a sustainable week.